You have in front of you, I assume you have in front of you, our study guide for tonight. We are doing this in a small group format, even though we are not a small group. We're spread out, and there's several of us here, but we're going to try just to follow this format. And our subject tonight is temptation. We started in our session one looking at 1 Corinthians 10:31. We will continue in that verse tonight. If you have, I know we have parents in the room, and you, if you're a parent, you know all about this. The proneness of the humankind to make excuses for wrong behavior. And if you've lived long enough as a parent, you've probably heard about every excuse that's coming and going. What are some of the favorite, for those of the parents in the room, what are some of the favorite excuses that children use on you? Everybody's doing it, Dad. Yeah, heard that one. What's the proper parental response to that excuse? Yeah, exactly. That's exactly the answer. If everybody else jumped off a bridge, would you jump off a bridge too?
My mom always told me everybody less one.
Everybody less one. That's a good answer. What's some other excuse? I'm actually just the parents tonight. I don't think you're a parent, so we'll give you a chance to talk in just a moment. I want to talk to the moms and dads a moment. What? What's that? Mommy lets me do it. Oh, the old playing one parent against the other thing. Yes. Yes. Yeah, that's some of you moms and dads connected to that. All right. What? I couldn't help it. That's going to be very important for our study tonight. Yeah, I just couldn't help it. Oh, just to go into denial. I didn't do it. Not me. Not me. Not me gets blamed for a lot of things. I didn't think it would be that big a deal. It sounds like you have personal experience with this, Dad. I didn't think it was that big a deal. All right. Did someone else say something? I didn't think you'd find out. That's, yeah. I knew if I talked to the moms and dads, we would get off to a good start on this because we've heard it. But you know, almost always when we make an excuse, we fail. And if we try it with God, we're always going to fail. Oh, I did this, I couldn't help, whatever. And the humankind has had good practice all the way back to the Garden of Eden. Remember the Garden of Eden story after Adam and Eve eat the fruit that was forbidden to them? First of all, who does Adam blame? It's her fault. That woman you gave me, it's her fault. That's very chivalrous and masculine of him, isn't it? You know, to take the male leadership. It's her fault. And what does she turn around and do? What? Well, you're getting ahead of me, but who did she blame? That serpent. And I'm coming to you now, Bill. In essence, who were they both blaming? They were ultimately blaming God. Lord, you set us up. I mean, you put us in this perfect garden, and you gave us a rule that we were bound to break, even though we could eat of all the other fruit from the trees. And you know, it's your fault. Well, today we're going to look at the second part of the idea that we find in 1 Corinthians 10:13. And do have your Bibles open and be ready. And if you were with us last week, you're really primed for this study. And by the way, let me strongly encourage you. This is a great verse to memorize, a great verse to commit to memory. It's not the shortest verse, but it's not the longest verse either. But it is, you could do it over a week or two, but it would just be very, very helpful when you think about the concepts that are built into the verse to help us with temptation, but also that the Spirit of God can have it at the ready, if you will, when we need it. Because you remember the first thing we looked at last week? Temptation is common to man. We talked about how it is common to all of us, and in some level it is common in our life. That's where we left last time. Be expecting temptation to come. Don't just assume I'm immune, never going to happen. It is going to happen. That's what the Word of God says. Tonight we want to look at this second section where let me just read the verse to you. First Corinthians 10:13. No temptation. Let me go back and read 12. Therefore let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you, except such as is common to man. That's where we ended last time. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able. That's our section for tonight. But with the temptation will also make a way of escape that you may be able to bear it. We're going to look at that phrase, Lord willing, next time we're studying this together. But that little phrase there, and it begins with, but God is faithful. But God is faithful, who will do what he promises. And what he promises is he is going to limit how much temptation he will allow to come into our lives. He promises, and this is the promise, and this is a good one, he is not going to allow more temptation into our life that we are capable of bearing. And I think impinging on that is of necessity is that we should walk in dependence and trust in God and have his resources. But we can never say that we are overwhelmed. But I want to first of all start with that phrase about where it's connected to God's faithfulness. How does that build confidence in your life? Where it says, but God is faithful to do this thing. What does that add to the promise that helps you as you live your life? Isn't that good? He will not let you down nor disappoint you. There's not too many people we know that you could say that about. But you can always say that about our God. I'm sorry, someone else said something? Did you say something? Now if you mumble, I might call on you, okay? I might catch you. Because we're in a small group and we can do that. All right. But God is faithful. It doesn't depend on me. Now, granted, I need to be living in obedience. I need to be in the Word. I need to be prayer. I need to have, my sins confessed. I need to be walking in fellowship with other believers. Don't misread that. All that has to be in place and should be in place. But this promise of limiting the temptation is not based on me. It's based on God. He says it. And I love it how Paul just inserts into here, but God is faithful. He could take that out of the verse, and the promise would still be stated just the same. But he puts this in as an extra layer of confidence and assurance for us. So don't miss that. Don't miss the assurance that we should have that it depends on him. Now, obviously, if it says he's not going to allow you to be tempted above that which you are able, would you not conclude that he knows where your limits are? He knows how much you're able? I mean, that's pretty obvious. Question, do you think we as people know where our limits are? Do you think we're that self-aware? Maybe you want to go back to verse 12 and look at that verse again, and you'll answer the question I just asked you. Let he who stands take heed. I think verse 13 is one of those verses that just, we need this information from God. Otherwise, we would never figure it out. We need to know that we are desperate in need of this information. We don't really know where we stand in this temptation thing. And we talked about camouflage. Remember, we talked about camouflage last week and how Satan wants it set up so that you don't see it coming until you're in the trap. By the way, did you know that hunters and people who fish for recreation are some of the most dishonest people on the planet? Did you know that? I know I'm offending some people. But you put that worm on that hook or that bait on that hook for the intended purpose to make the fish think he's about to have dinner. Right? Isn't that what you do when you fish? He does get to keep the worm. Okay, well, that makes it all right, right? Yeah, well, they do steal the bait on occasion. But there's a bit of a deception. And that's okay for fishermen, okay? That's just the way it works. Okay for hunters. But in this situation, Satan loves to have a hook in it. He loves to cover it, make it look like something it's not. So be ready for that. Okay, back to our text. Here's this. We're going back to where we started. What does this truth do to our tendency to make excuses that excuse our wrong behavior? Say it. It eliminates it. You don't think you could even shoehorn an excuse in and make it fit? Okay, Chris has made a very, very strong statement over here. I'm going to see if you're going to back him up or not. He says it absolutely, totally eliminates it. Are you going to agree with him? I think you got some good support because I agree with you too. We are without excuse. We can never say, I couldn't help it. Someone back here said that one is one of the ones you could. Yes, sir. Ooh. That's good, but also sort of stinging. Did you hear what he said? An excuse only makes sense to the person making the excuse. That's proverbial. It's not a proverb in the Bible, but proverbial. Yeah, it really does. It's an all purpose excuse eliminator. Well, I was overwhelmed and couldn't help it. I'm a victim. It just happened. You know, things got out of control, got carried away, whatever it is. No. By the way, it's a verse that really pulls us back to a deeper level of personal responsibility, doesn't it, if we really take it that way? If we have messed up, it is our fault. Yes, sir? Yeah, but that is true. But it's still our fault, not God's. That's the point I'm making. But yes, and we'll look at that more. And this is one of the disadvantages of looking at a verse a third at a time, because we're going to bore into that, what it means to find the way of escape. There is a way of escape. You have to choose to find it, and you have to choose to exercise it. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, but sometimes we live in a world that so wants to minimalize sin. It's whoever said when I was asking the parents a little bit ago, I didn't think it was that important, or I don't think I was going to get caught. And one of the reasons I do that with parents is thinking of children, because it's not just children that make those excuses. We might be more sophisticated in our discussion of them, but the fact is, he has limited the temptation to a level that's appropriate to our abilities. And if we have messed up, if we have sinned, if we've transgressed, it's up to us to raise our hands and say, that's on me. Instead of going down the route, this very non-productive route of excuse making. Yes, sir? You may. Okay. Hmm.
He said, I don't even trust myself.
Yeah.
Trustworthy,
honesty, right. In case you didn't hear what he said, that the quote was, daughter comes to dad, asks permission to do something. Dad says, no, you can't do it. And the response was, sounds a little manipulative, doesn't it? But don't you trust me? And Dad says, I don't even trust myself, because that kind of goes back to that beginning of the verse. Temptation is common to man. So we just need to admit that. Okay? Let's take a little case study. Oh, wait a minute, one more question before I go from the front page. Do you think the ability to resist is connected to God's power and work within you? It has to be, doesn't it? I mean, it's not that we ever are to be operating as believers apart. So another good sort of warning statement to insert here, that this is not divorced from other truth. This is not separated from other truth. In fact, if you study the bigger context of 1 Corinthians, there's lots of things he's putting in there. I mean, he's coming up, this is chapter 10, he's now getting into the section on spiritual gifts. And, you do all these great things, you don't have love, you're like clanging the brass and banging on a cymbal. There is that deep connection to God and to have a love for Him and a love for His people and those sorts of things. Okay, let's take a little case study if you will. We're going to go back to the Old Testament book of Job for just a moment. In chapter 1, and in this fascinating and to our eyes and ears somewhat bewildering story of Job, through the revelation of God, it's as if God kind of reaches over to the window shade that hides so much of what goes on in God's economy from us and kind of raises the window shade and says, take a brief look in here, what's going on in heaven connected to this man named Job. The book begins in chapter 1, telling about Job and what kind of man he is and so forth and so on, and all the good things that are going on. It says, verse 6, we see this scene in the presence of God. Now, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came with them. Now, I'm not going to answer all your questions tonight about Job. I just want to look at this one aspect of it, okay? I'm not even sure I could answer all of your questions about Job because there's some of this. But anyway, Satan presents himself before God. And listening to their conversation, we get an eavesdrop on it. And the Lord said to Satan, from where did you come? So Satan answered and said, from going to and fro on the earth and walking back and forth on it. And the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? And that there is none like him on earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil. And as a matter of fact, Satan had considered Job because he knows Job already. Look at Satan's answer, this accusation. And Satan answered the Lord and said, does Job fear God for nothing? What's he implying there? What's he implying about Job's motivation for being the person he was? He's got everything he could want. Of course he's going to love you. You've given him all these blessings. You bought him off. You have purchased his loyalty from all these good things in his life. That's what Satan's implying. Now, have you not made a hedge around him and around his household and around all he has on every side? You have blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land. But now, stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will surely curse you to your face. Take all the goodies away, and you'll see what his loyalty is. Put it to the test. And then it says, verse 12, this is our key verse here, and then we'll look at one more. And the Lord said to Satan, behold, all that he has is in your power, only do not lay a hand on his person. So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord. In the midst of this very mystifying story, God says, I will let you go this far and no more. Now, it's amazing to us that he let him go as far as he did. That's the part that's kind of shocking to our sensibilities. But it's one of those places where you see God sets a very firm limit in place to limit the temptation. Now, I think you know the rest of the story, all the calamity that comes upon Job and all that happens to him. But then we have round two in chapter 2, verse 1, chapter 2. Again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said to Satan, from where do you come? And Satan answered the Lord, from going to and fro on the earth and from walking back and forth in it. And the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job, that he is not like, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears the Lord and shuns evil, and still he holds fast to his integrity, although you incited me against him to destroy him without cause. Job came through that test successfully. The temptation was limited, but he holds fast. Here's Satan's response in verse 4. So Satan answered the Lord and said, skin for skin. Yes, all man has he will give for his life. But stretch out now your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will surely curse you to your face. And the Lord said to Satan, behold, he is in your hand, but spare his life. He allows him even to his body to be inflicted, and if you read the rest of the chapter, it was. But again, he sets a limit. Now, it's an extremely out there limit. And you remember how this chapter comes to further to fruition, that he was struck, it says in verse 7, with boils, and he's sitting around scraping himself, and he's just in agony. And then verse 9, he has this conversation with his wife. Then his wife said to him, do you still hold fast to your integrity? Interesting. It's kind of the same part of the conversation that God was talking about. You hold to your integrity? Curse God and die. She will not go down in history as the most sympathetic of spouses on record. I think we can say it that way. Just curse God and die. But look what he says. He said to her, "You speak as one of the foolish. Speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Shall we indeed accept good from God, and shall not accept adversity from his lips?" Job stands out as a remarkable testimony of shunning evil, as God points out. But I want you to go back to the end of end of chapter 1 for just a moment. After all the calamity that struck, verse 20 says, "Then Job arose, tore his robe, and shaved his head, and fell to the ground and worshipped." Don't you find that amazing? He doesn't fall in question. He doesn't fall in curse. He doesn't fall completely enveloped in his sorrow, though I know he had much. He falls down and worships God. And listen to what he says. "And he said, 'Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return there. I brought nothing in this world, take nothing out.'" In other words, "The Lord gave and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." Verse 22, "In all this, Job did not sin nor charge God with wrong." Does this give you any hope for our lives? I'm thankful to God that in his wisdom, he's not allowed me to face the temptation that Job was going through. You know, sometimes we think of Bible characters, we think, I'd like to have this experience, that experience. No one ever raised their hand and said, "I'd like to go through Job's experience in life. I would love to." No, wouldn't want to do that. But does his victory give you an encouragement? Think about that for a moment. Put that in your own words, how that sounds or how that feels. How does that give you hope? Yes. Yes. Yeah. So you can hear that. He was just, what Chris shared was, there's a bigger point to it all. And by the way, that's kind of the theme of the book of Job. And frankly, even after Job is restored, God has really never told him what the point was. There's just some things that God knows that we don't. Now, we as the readers of the story have a little bit of the backstory, but it doesn't appear that Job had any of that information. But there is a point. God is in control, and it encourages. Yes, sir. Guy? Yes. Yes, he I think he came to that point. I think if you track it through his discourses and sometimes almost arguments with his friends, which is the big chunk of the book. It's not till you get to like chapter 38, God shows up, asks all those questions, and the end of the book, you know, there's a restoration. But yes. But and it does. I'll just share my own thought. And as you talk about, he's still limiting Satan. If I could play off that for just a moment, that should give us hope and encouragement. It's that promise of 10:13, 1 Corinthians. There's a limit that God puts in place. Remember what Satan said? You put a hedge around him. You put a hedge around all that he has. Sometimes we fail to recognize it, but I think God has a hedge around all of us, a hedge of protection, a zone of safety. And I don't know about you, but I just think that should give us some resilience and some hope and some confidence. And I think of it this way. You know, if Job can be victorious with this kind of a temptation, then there's certainly the possibility for me when I'm not facing anything remotely like this and do not want to. And it comes back to this promise of 1 Corinthians 10:13. He will not allow you to be tempted above what you're able. Why? Because God is faithful. And God will do that for you. There's a couple things just to sort of finally apply it, and then I'll give you a bottom line, which is just a kind of a summary statement to kind of tack our thoughts onto tonight. And this one, I don't want you to answer out loud, okay? This is just for us personally to meditate. Have you ever fallen into a trap, into the trap of excusing your falling into the trap of temptation? Do you fall in the trap of excusing falling into the trap? You'll just have to answer that for yourself, but I suspect all of us have gone down the excuse route longer than we should have. All this or that. It's not that big deal, whatever it is. But, question, how productive is that activity? I see about four people going, like, shaking their head right to left. Why is it non-productive? That's a good point. What Bill said was, why is it non-productive? It doesn't really lead to a change of behavior. It really doesn't change anything. You're really right back where you started from. And maybe if I could just push that up further, you know, one of the redemptive things about our failings, yeah, we receive God's forgiveness and we confess it as sin and we tell on ourselves, but hopefully we would learn something from it. Even the just things that we really should never have got to, there should be a redemptive, we should learn how the temptation works and learn how it feels and learn that there's consequences for our misbehavior. But if you just make an excuse, it sort of negates that ability to learn from even our failings, doesn't it? Because we're saying, it's not my fault. I have no responsibility. I have nothing in it. Okay, here's the second bring it home statement. Seek to, and this is kind of a statement for all of us to put in place. Seek to remind yourself daily that you will not be tempted past the point of your ability to resist. And then the other half of that, while at the same time trusting in His divine power to assist you. In other words, this is a promise that needs to be claimed in real life, real time. Just like that, temptation is common to man. I need to expect it. Secondly, we need to trust in God's faithfulness that there is a limit. And as I said, next time we'll look at the last half of that verse, last third of that verse about that way of escape. We're going to find at least one or maybe two good Bible examples of someone who God gave the escape route, and it's very obvious that takes place. So, bottom line, this is just to hang our thoughts on. Here's what we should do. Eliminate all excuses. Why? Because there's a limit to the temptation that God has for us.